But let me jump on into today's Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll just remind you guys that Stan McDonald, attorney Stan McDonald, from the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, he is a 30-year veteran in the practice of law, and Stan McDonald is indeed the daily sponsor of our Right Side Way monologue. So I'll tell you more about Stan here momentarily. But listen, I'm gonna tell you a great story. This is gonna be a great story. This is one of those urban legends that is actually a fact. It's a story about real folks doing real things during really bad times. So sit back in amazement as I tell you the story of the rooftop Koreans. And if you've watched the news for any length of time over the past 48 hours, you may have been as shocked and maddened as I was to see video of law enforcement being just assaulted, vehicles burned, rioting and looting, and the flags of foreign countries actually being waved over all of it. This is not in the streets of Gaza. This is not in some third world tin pot government facing an uprising of their masses. No, this is Los Angeles, California. And the angst on the streets is literally protesting against illegal aliens being deported. Make that make sense. Oh, that's right, you can't. Added to the fray is the fact that liberal officials have been making the situation just maddeningly worse. Gavin Newsom challenging Tom Homan to come arrest him, of all things. L.A. Mayor Bass, she's once again decrying the idea of law and order, refusing to cooperate with federal authorities. The city of Glendale just canceled its ICE agreement overnight in an act of appeasement to the rabble on the streets. Maxine Waters, that cartoon of a congresswoman, she went out to the protest herself and yelled insults at police and dared them to shoot her. I kid you not. And none other than presidential wannabe vice liar-in-chief Kamala Harris. She issued a written statement in favor of the quote-unquote largely peaceful protests, encouraged it to continue. And once again, with feckless, reckless, and respectless elected leaders, the Golden State has caught fire. But this isn't the first time, though. I mean, California and LA in particular have been the scene of epic events of civil unrest. And I don't mean just people expressing their views. I'm talking about riots, like destructive riots, the kind where property is destroyed and people are killed. Riots that are the result of lawlessness and bad leadership. But every time something like this happens, it turns out there's people who will stand in the gap for their communities. Men and women in blue, citizen soldiers of the National Guard, first responders, they're all heroes during times like this. But sometimes there's also those groups of citizens who decide that enough is enough. Common folk who get tired of being tired and decide to draw their own proverbial line in the sand. And that, my friends, is what happened in the 1992 riots when a group of men became legends and are known to this day as the Rooftop Koreans. If the live stream's up, we'll have a picture up for you to see it, but there's pictures of the Rooftop Koreans. Let me tell you about them. So in 1992, Americans watched South Central Los Angeles go up in flames on the news. Tensions inside the neighborhoods, a mix of racial minority demographics, all long plagued by urban blight. It reached a boiling point after multiple incidents of racial violence. And then all hell broke loose when white police officers detained and beat a black man named Rodney King. And in April of 92, a jury, having heard the evidence, acquitted the officers and the rioters took to the streets in a racially charged period of mayhem. I mean, like, mayhem. Acts of violence became the norm. Looting and burning of buildings were daily occurrences. Leading up to this time, the immigrant community from Southeast Asia had grown tremendously, and there was a growing resentment between black activists and the influx of Koreans who had legally immigrated and begun setting up their own businesses in South Central LA. Angry mobs targeted a Chinese immigrant named Choi Si Choi and a white trucker named Reginald Denny, beat them on live TV during coverage of the riots. It was black residents who actually saved the victims, pulled them out of harm's way. But it overall still added to the chaos. Well, the 1992 LA riots lasted for 5 full days. According to resident accounts, law enforcement really did little to quell the unrest. The LAPD was unequipped to handle the looting crowds, and they pulled back and they left South Central residents on their own, including the businesses in the Koreatown neighborhood. Well, over the course of the violence, 60 people were killed and over $1 billion in property damage was done. And 40% of that damage was done against Korean-American stores and businesses. But there was a group of Korean-Americans, though, who decided to stem the tide. They had immigrated lawfully to America to build a better life for themselves and their families, and they had staked everything to build dry cleaners and restaurants and shops and newsstands. and they were watching as angry mobs yelling epithets against them set fire to their dreams. Well, to this day, the Korean-American community in L.A. still refers to the riots as the Sai-Igu. Sai-Igu, which translates to April 29th. Much like the nation refers to the terrorism of 2001 as simply 9/11, the Korean-American community in L.A. uses that date to signify the day when things went bad. But on Sai-Igu, April 29th of 1992, the Korean-American community, they weren't going to take it lying down. It became apparent the authorities had no means to control the streets. So these Koreans armed themselves. They did. And the word went out on a Korean language radio station that volunteers were needed in LA's Koreatown. And they turned out in droves. Images still abound of Korean men, many of whom had served in the South Korean army, just standing on rooftops, literally, standing on rooftops, turning out in droves, standing up there with shotguns and hunting rifles and AR-15s, and they stood their ground. And they stayed there for days. They used walkie-talkies to communicate back and forth across the buildings. They had multiple times when there were warning shots fired at potential looters. But the records of the events don't record a single person having been killed by one of the rooftop Korean guards. But their properties were saved. Yes, they were. Their stubbornness and their honor and their sense of doing what was necessary has made them the stuff of legend, the source of memes for decades. During the whole series of events, the Korean Americans and even the non-Korean Americans in that community supported the efforts of their citizen militia. They brought them food, supplies. They were much loved. It was about the protection of property. It was about preserving life and a way of life. It was about empowerment. It was about deterrence and not allowing evil to have its way. It was about self-reliance and proving that they could stand up under duress. In the end, the 1992 riots went on so long that President Bush finally activated the U.S. military presence and he sent 15,000 troops into South Central L.A. to quell the riots. But the damage had been done, and a legend had been created. The rooftop Koreans. There have been documentaries, news stories, graphic novels, and even coffee mugs made about them. They have been immortalized as a symbol of what happens when good folks get pushed too far and feel like their government's letting them down. They've been extolled by defenders of the Second Amendment as examples of what can actually happen if an armed citizen stands and tries to deflect and dissuade crime by merely being there and standing armed in the gap. But I have to wonder, though, is there still that level of citizen commitment? Are we going to see rooftop Koreans or some sort of similar stand taken in today's melee out there in L.A.? I mean, right now there's pallets of bricks being delivered to the protesters. And you got mayors and governors and former vice presidents cynically calling on the protest to continue. What happens, though? What happens when good people feel pushed too far? Government has a purpose. It does. The founders intended for a government to provide for the common defense, establish the rule of law, ensure that life, limb, and property are protected. And there are some things that governments are designed for, like fighting our nation's wars, establishing trade with foreign nations, protecting the vulnerable by means of police and fire departments, ensuring equal justice, enacting laws through representative bodies of elected citizens. But I also believe that the value of the private citizen, the private effort, is also what makes this country so great. We should never desire to be a nation of low-level non-producers who just reach out to the government for the next stimulus check or the next handout or the next excuse why we don't have to go to work. A nation where productivity is stymied by so many regulations that folks just give up and quit trying. Where taxation becomes so onerous that people choose not to produce. And most importantly, perhaps, we should never consent to being a nation where lawbreakers have more sway than law abiders, where illegal aliens have more rights than legal citizens. We should never approve of anarchy or agree to lawlessness. Law enforcement and civil order are essential services of government. They are. And when government fails to provide those essential services to include law and order, what's a citizen to do? At that point, you can become a victim, or you can stand. You can stand like a rooftop Korean, staring down the enemies of your way of life and daring them to cross that line. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.